You had also said that you were part of the rank and file. As part of the rank and file, how did you participate? I do believe in one of our earlier conversations that you had mentioned taking buses up to San Francisco.
Yes. It seemed like every other week, buses would come down from San Francisco for a service in Los Angeles, and then the alternate week, buses from Los Angeles would go up to San Francisco. Now, the thing about that, my wife at the time had a brother who lived in San Francisco. And so what we would do with our baby girl, we would catch the bus up there, and we would get off of the bus at the San Francisco Temple. We would go catch the city bus to her brother's house, spend the weekend sightseeing and hanging out with her brother, and get back to the buses just in time to get on and come back to L.A., and nobody ever missed us.
So you were also telling me about a ping pong game.
Yes, this was, they were expecting a visit from Angela Davis, and this was at the San Francisco Temple. And I guess this is one of the times me and my wife didn't go see her brother. And me and Jim Jones' son were playing ping pong, and something happened, and we got into an argument, and it almost came to blows. People had to pull us apart. Now, we're there waiting for Angela Davis to come, and it would have looked pretty bad if she walks in there and somebody is fighting one of Jim Jones' sons. So they pulled us apart, cooler heads prevailed, and Miss Davis did come through, and everything worked out. But, you know, that was, I look back on it, and I'm sure whatever we were arguing about was silly. But at the time, you know, when you're teenagers and there's people around watching you, you don't want to take a step back. So, you know, we almost came to blows. But, you know, that's just a memory that I have of that period of time. Because when Angela Davis came through, she was very nice and talked to everybody. And she seemed to be impressed with the things she saw. Because, I mean, they had fake things going on. They had it like there was people in there on drugs and we were helping them, you know, which wasn't true at that time. Now, I'm not saying they never helped anybody get off the drugs, but that day they were faking it. They had members acting like they were strung out on drugs and other members there helping them.
That's quite interesting. So what other stories do you remember?
I do remember, and I think this is when, now that I think about it, this is when I think I did go up and join the church. And I remember walking back, and, you know, maybe I was 21, 22, this older guy, he put something in my hand. When I'm walking, shaking people's hand, he said, "Don't look at it now." And so, you know, I didn't look at it now. So then I think it was at the end of service. So I walk outside and he has a piece of paper balled up. And I open it and it's just a blank sheet of paper. And I'm thinking, okay, did he just want me to throw away his trash? But he must have been watching me because he walked over to me and he whispered in my ear and he said, "Everything is not as it appears." And I'll never forget he told me that.
Do you remember who that was?
No, I don't remember who it was. I don't know if he was one of the people who were close to Jim Jones or just a regular member. But, you know, if I should have heeded the words he said and paid more attention. But I didn't, and I lost, you know, two people that were very dear to me.
Are you a part of a religious organization now?
Well, now I'm a Sunni Muslim. I decided to look into different religions, and I read the Bible, and then I read the Quran, and the Quran touched me in a way that I became a Muslim. Now, what's funny about that, when I became a Muslim, most black Americans in America, I don't know if it's true now, but at a certain period of time, you're introduced to Islam through the Nation of Islam. And I had joined the Nation of Islam back in, I think it was 95. And what struck me with them is that every service I went to, they were reading from the Bible. They weren't reading from the Quran. They sold you a Quran, but I never saw them use the Quran. And when they sold me the Quran, I read it, and I saw the difference between Nation of Islam and the Islam that's practiced over in Arabia. And that's when I switched and became a Sunni Muslim.
Did you ever ask why?
Oh, no, I didn't ask why they didn't read from the Quran. I think one of the reasons they read from the Bible is they were always bringing in Christians and trying to convert them, but using the Bible instead of the Quran. That's just something just my opinion. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I kind of gathered from it.
So what else would you like to share as far as your memories of People's Temple? Were they overall happy memories, except for the incident, or?
There was an apartment building next to the church in Los Angeles, and it was, a co-op, really. You know, we were living there, and it was a commune. And what I liked about it at the time is that I was working somewhere making minimum wage. My wife was getting a county check, so we weren't making a lot of money at all. We were way below the poverty line, but we were able to survive by living there. You know, all of our needs were met. The rent, food, clothing, everything that that we needed was met. And in turn, you know, we did work around the church when it was our turn to do it, whether it was security or our cooking or cleaning the buses or whatever it was. So, and the people that I worked with, the other rank and file members who were into that lifestyle, really made it fun. Those are the memories that you have of the people that were there with you. And, you know, that was a fun time for me and my wife. We enjoyed that time immensely.
Are you still friends with anybody from People's Temple?
That's the thing. When that happened, nobody trusted anybody. In fact, when I look back on it, one of the things that drove a wedge between my wife and I was that I saw some things that weren't kosher as far as People's Temple was concerned over the years, and she wasn't listening. You know, she wasn't having it. Like, he would do these healings, and over a period of years, he healed just about everybody in that church from something that either would have debilitated them or caused them death. And I remember one time saying to my mom, I said, "Mom, you can't believe in this. Because you're going to tell me that if it wasn't for Jim Jones, all these 400 people in here would have been dead by now?" I said, "Mom, that doesn't make sense." But, you know, she didn't want to hear it either. You know, and that's when my wife and my mom became close, because they both believed in the same thing. Because they had told Jim Jones had told them that they needed to put some kind of prayer cloth under my pillow to stop some kind of accident I was going to have. But they couldn't tell me. And so at the time, me and my wife were, we had just got married. We were living with my mother and my stepdad. And they attempted to do it, but I discovered what they were doing. And they said, well, we got to put this under there or else you're going to have a bad accident or something. I said, "Mom, no." You know, I told my wife, "No, this is not real." that you guys have to believe, you know, everybody in this church would have been dead by now if it wasn't for Jim Jones. You can't possibly believe that. But they were believers. They believed it wholeheartedly. You know, it was, they were really into it. And I think that was the start of the split that I had with me and my wife.
When you separated from your wife and she left for Guyana, you said that you did not know that she had gone. Were there, until they were already there, were there any, did you have regular correspondence with her aside from the one letter?
No. The one letter is the only letter I got. The only correspondence. And it was, like I said, when she put that little phrase in there, I knew something was wrong. And I told my mom, and my mom was close to a couple of people at the church, but they calmed her down and said nothing's wrong, unbeknownst to us at the time, that the people who were back here, his ministers, they still had family members over in Guyana. So they had to be careful of what they said, because that would have put their family members over there in danger. And so they couldn't tell us anything was wrong, even if they knew something was wrong, because they didn't want anything to happen to their family members. I heard about those, I don't know what they called them, I'll just say Black Knights, where they drank the fake poison to say that people come after us. This is something that, this is something that we have to do. You know, I think he called it revolutionary suicide. If I remember, Huey Newton wrote a book called Revolutionary Suicide. In fact, I was told later on that they had a recording of Huey Newton saying what a good job that Jim Jones was doing and that people should believe in him. You know, but since I wasn't there, I don't know what the recording said. I don't know how many times it played, but that's the message that I got later on.
All right. You also said that your daughter and wife were interred at Evergreen Cemetery in Oakland.
Right. Yes. I've seen pictures of their names there, but I haven't visited the cemetery yet.
Is that too hard?
That's a hard thing to do.
Is that too hard for you?
Yeah, it's kind of a hard thing to do. You know, another thing, I couldn't look at any movies about it, any documentaries. I couldn't look at the pictures. You know, because when you look at the pictures, you know, you're looking, I'm looking for my wife, and, you know, it just became too hard. And especially afterwards when I couldn't talk to my mom about it. Because at that time, I really couldn't talk to anybody, because nobody could know how you could feel. You know, nobody knew how you felt. And the people that I was closest to, my mom, my stepdad, you know, I couldn't have those conversations with them. So it was hard. In fact, I remember going to speak to a psychologist. And after the first meeting, that didn't work out too good. And I left there upset. So I never went back.
Why were you upset after the meeting, if you can share?
Because, you know, it takes a while for you to pour your heart out. It's still new. It's still fresh. You don't want to believe it, but it's believable. And I remember I was at a time when I was pouring my heart out, and there was a knock. It was a female psychologist, a knock on the door. She goes and asks and come back and says, well, my lunch date is here. We'll have to continue this later. And that was it. So I say, okay, I'm through with her.
If there was anything you wish would have been made available to you, what would that have been?
You know, at the time, obviously, I wish that things had turned out different and they weren't there at all. But also, I wish that there would have been somebody to talk to who could calm me down and just tell me about the future. I try to make things better. There was none of that. I mean, there was nothing like that. And, you know, I also felt guilty about another young teenager who they sent over there. And it was because we were doing guard duty. And some kind of way, me and this, I'm about 23, he's about 15, 16. This teenager, we got in a fight. And they just sent him right over to Jonestown. And I'm pretty sure he didn't survive. And I felt guilty about that also, that, you know, his death was on my hands.
Wow.
You know, guilt can be a terrible thing to experience. You know, because there were, like I said, there were signs that I saw that things weren't right. And I just couldn't convince my wife to leave and let it go. I just couldn't convince her. You know, plus I had my mom on the other side telling her what a wonderful man Jim Jones was. And it was just hard to overcome that. It was really difficult. So that, you know, I wish there would have been somebody who would have been able to talk to me. Well, like I said, the actor from Miami Vice, Philip Michael Thomas, and this is way before Miami Vice, you know, he was talking to me, he was there for me, but it wasn't the same. And I appreciate it, you know, and he probably has no idea how much it meant to me at the time. But it was, you know, that was something that I needed more of, you know, because one of the things, people were looking at you like you were crazy. At that time, if you told them that you were associated with Jim Jones, they looked at you in a different way because they're thinking, you know, how can people do this? How can he get people to follow him to kill themselves? And actually, they had guns on them. You know, it was either drink that or, you know, be shot down. And you know, speaking of that, that's another thing that just irritates me to no end. Now, you hear people always use the term drinking the Kool-Aid. And it just really bothers me because you had these mostly black, but all poor people who died that way. And I'm thinking, okay, what if we started using the term, I'm not walking into that oven, referring to the Jews who died in Nazi Germany. People would lose their freaking mind. So it's okay to disparage and have a cliche about poor black people, but you can't do that with other people. And that really bothers me to this day.
I can understand why it might, or why it should. So,
yeah, go ahead.
So, do you still carry some of that guilt with you?
Every minute of every day.
Do you think this could happen again?
I think it could happen again. You know, to be honest with you, I'm just shocked when I see some of these evangelical preachers on TV, the Kenneth Copelands, Graham Franklins, the way they control their flocks, the way they become so political. It just astounds me. I don't ever think people will get to the point where they will be in a position to take their lives. But I do think that people are being controlled way too much by these, and you know, these are just, I call them jackleg preachers. You know, money is all they want. They can tell you how to vote. They can tell you how to live. They can tell you something that's not true, and you will believe it. You know, truth doesn't matter in America anymore. This is madness.
Would you say in a comparison that People's Temple actually offered more than these other evangelical groups you've mentioned?
Well, one of the things that People's Temple did, I know instances where if somebody was losing their house, the church would step in and make the back payments and keep them from losing their house. If you had somebody in jail, 9 times out of 10, they could get them out. They were doing things for people because I don't know if most people don't know that Jim Jones was the housing commissioner in the city of San Francisco. And when you have a church with that many people in it, and you have local elections, you can wield a lot of power. You have the power to sway an election. And so a lot of politicians played up to him to get his members to vote their way. And, you know, he did do some things for people. It's just that in the end, you know, his craziness, I don't know if it was craziness, I don't know if it was drugs, I don't know if it was arrogance. But he just, you know, went down the wrong path and took all these people with him. But he did do some good things in the beginning. And, you know, like I said, I wasn't into the religious part, but I was into the socialism, you know, because I saw him do some things I'll never forget in a service. And I had to be sitting about 20, 30 rows back. He threw a Bible and it landed right next to this woman sitting on the end. And he said that she was there as a spy and this whole bit. I mean, it was crazy. It was crazy, but they were doing some things. I remember spending a week up in, I think it was Ukiah, California, when they were clearing some land or something, and we were up there chopping down trees. I know now why they call the mighty oak, because you try to chop that down, it bounces off of it like it's rubber. But, you know, me and my wife, we were involved. I believed in the socialistic part. She believed in the religious part. And when we couldn't agree on something, that's when we started to separate. And, you know, I told you earlier, I feel guilty about that every day, because, you know, you look back on it and you think there's so many different things you could have done, you know, so many different ways I could have handled things and, you know, they would have survived. I even thought if I had been there, I could have saved them. But, you know, that's not the right thinking, because, you know, there was no way to fight that. The people who got out were just lucky and you know, either snuck out or got overlooked. But, you know, nobody just grabbed a gun and walked out of there. Not to my knowledge, anyway. Oh, yeah, I see a lot of parallels in what's going on now. You know, you have just people believing in stuff that's not real, and I don't understand it. You know, you can have, you know, now people think that voting is not right. You know, that there's something wrong with the voting based on one lie by one man. How can one man have that much power where he can make, 47% or 40% of the people in America think that there's something wrong with the votes when he doesn't win? Nobody's questioned it before, except maybe in 2000 when Justin won state Florida. But now you've got people, even when a recount says he lost, he'll get up the next day and said, the recount proves that I won. They need to decertify it. This is madness. And I've seen this play before with Jim Jones. I've seen this before. So I don't know how people can fall into this. This doesn't make sense to me.
I have